Hello and welcome to AFPT Comics Podcast, episode 73. My name is David Brook. I am your co-host, and this week we have a guest co-host, dun-dun-dun. Who is it? Other than Nathan Simmons, who's been on the show how many times, Nathan?
I think this is like the fifth time, maybe. Nice. It's been a few months. It's been a while.
Yeah, you have like a sash now, right? I mean, it's like Five Timers Club.
Yeah, I'm waiting until restrictions are lifted, and then you guys are gonna mail me my sash.
There you go.
Yeah,
it'll come with two pins, but you can fill out the rest of the pins the more times you're on the show.
Fantastic. Good.
This is the comic book podcast where we talk about the latest and greatest comic book news. We review comics. We have guests on the show.
Mm-hmm.
This week we are going back to the old format, the usual format, where we talk about the top books of last week. We look ahead for the comics coming out next week and pick our favorite cover art coming out next week.
Because books are back, y'all.
Yeah, baby. Now, there's been a light back.
That's true. A smattering. Yeah.
Because DC has been releasing stuff for the last few weeks. Marvel, as well, digital only releases have been coming up. But this week in particular, every publisher pretty much had something new on the comic book shelf, if you can get to the comic book shop.
We love to see it.
Things will be picking up more and more as the weeks go ahead. As you might know, if you've been listening to this show, we keep talking about, you know, upcoming release dates and stuff. And it sounds like possibly by August we'll be back to normal. I believe like Marvel in particular is still shipping less books.
Right.
Because of this long gap with the pandemic, they've cut back some books, held some books, but we'll see where we're at in a couple months. It's still exciting though, because I mean, man, there was a period there where we thought, is it ever going to return?
Right. We're still that way with movies, so.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm actually looking forward to safely putting on a mask and going into a comic shop for the first time in like, 3 months?
And you're in Florida, right?
I am.
So are shops allowed to be open in Florida?
You know, I think they are. I think a lot of them are opening at like 50% capacity, but I'm not 100% sure. I'm pretty sure the one like closest to me is still closed at the moment.
Right.
But it's so funny. Well, it's not funny, but I went through a move right at the beginning of the year. And so I had just started to like figure out where my new shop was going to be. And then, and then everything kind of closed.
Yeah,
so
this happened.
So it's just, it's going to be an interesting experience kind of trying to keep an ear out for things reopening and then creating a pull list again, which is, because a couple of the books that were on my pull are going to be finished digitally. So,
right. That makes it tricky.
Yeah. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah. Things are pretty much still closed in Massachusetts. I think they're opening hair salons on Monday.
Oh, thank God.
I know, right? I couldn't believe that was one of the main things that were first going to open.
I'm embracing, like, I'm turning into, I'm straight up Shaggy from Scooby-Doo at this point. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm saying like more in my sentences.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a good time.
To start every show, we page through all the comic book websites, including our own, to find the top news. So in the top of our news, Boom Studios came out earlier this week and announced Wind as a limited series. Now, why is this big news? It's a bit odd because they actually solicited this as an OGN, an original graphic novel, to come out in November.
Mm-hmm.
And then they decided to split it up into single issues. And they didn't give the heads up. Via solicitations and whatnot.
No, yeah, they announced it like on the 18th for like the 17th of next month.
Right, which is a bit crazy. But then at the same time, I was thinking, is this genius? Because, you know, Marvel's coming out with less books in June.
Mm-hmm.
Every other week, in fact, they're having single issues come out.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe the shops will have more space. But at the same time, shops aren't even open in a lot of states.
Right.
So, I don't know, people may or may not even be able to peruse those shelves.
It's interesting. I mean, it does seem like it's an effort to get more product on the shelves, which I think is actually a really smart move.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost the reverse of what I've felt like a lot of the DC Inc. graphic novels have been, because those read like miniseries that have been put together into a book.
Right.
And then I wonder how well this translates into, you know, multiple issues. But I mean, if my company hadn't been putting product on the shelves for, you know, 3 months, I would also be trying to figure out how to like basically you know, once the doors are back open, flooding the market as much as I could. Like, right. it's a pretty genius solution.
I think it was smart of Marvel and DC to be releasing digital only because people are mm-hmm. so hungry for content. And mm-hmm. and some of the most of the titles aren't those primo AAA books like Batman.
Mm-hmm.
So you might actually get more eyeballs on your books that were, you know, ignored before.
Right. And Wind is going to be, they're like double-sized issues too.
Right.
So that'll be, I mean, hopefully that'll work out for them in terms of like pricing as well.
True. True. Yeah, actually, I don't think the press release said anything about price, even though they're 40-page books. Wind is actually written by James Tynion IV and drawn by Michael
Dylanus.
He's great.
I
love his work.
Yeah, he is.
That should be pretty cool. It's a fantasy magic realm, whole other universe series. Looks fun.
Yeah, just that cover art is like, you know, it has a kind of hopeful feel to it. Like, it, I don't know, mm-hmm. there's something about it that I'm just like, okay, that looks like the kind of story I want to read right now.
Boom is just killing it with all these new releases, all these mm-hmm. new, some are ongoing, some are limited. Also announced this week is Seven Secrets by Tom Taylor and Daniel D. Nicolo.
Mm-hmm.
It's coming out in August. It has a manga feel to me, the cover at least.
Right.
Tom Taylor's been teasing this for a little bit. Like, I think last week he teased the logo for Seven Secrets. And it looks like a lot of fun. There's some sketch art and some cover art that's actually on aptcomics.com if you go over to the website.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get to check out this news?
Yeah, the description of the plot has a very, and also a lot of the character designs, like it feels like tailor-made for the YA market in a good
tailor-made
way.
Tailor-made by Tom Taylor?
I didn't mean it, I swear. But the, yeah, I don't know, it, you know, it's a little early to tell, but I really dig the aesthetic, and yeah, it's fun. I mean, I really enjoyed Tom Taylor's writing. Mm-hmm. So I think he comes up with, I don't know that I've read anything he's done with original characters before though. So I'm very, very interested to see how that goes.
Yeah. He's done a few things, but I mean, he's mainly a DC Marvel guy.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of, Deceased is getting a digital first series. That's going to be 14 chapters by mm-hmm. Tom Taylor. It was announced this week. It's being called Digital First, so I'm assuming it'll eventually be collected in a trade.
Right.
It's not being released as single issues, though. And it essentially gives us some more insight into the deceased universe.
Right. Which is an interesting... I just finished reading Unkillables, and I kind of love the mix of pre-New 52 and, like, current DC world building. I mean, like, you've got, you know, Stephanie Brown running around in her old like black bat costume and stuff like that. Have you read Hope at World's End?
I haven't.
The first issue feels like a quick recap of the whole deal.
Okay.
But from Jimmy Olsen's perspective,
mm-hmm.
it almost I don't want to spoil anything, but the final page makes me think that this is Tom Taylor's version of Marvel's at the end of the world,
okay.
because Jimmy has taken on a very Phil Sheldon kind of vibe by the end of that first issue. That's all I will say. But I'm just hoping that it doesn't. I really dug the first Deceased miniseries. I liked a lot of Unkillables, and then with this one kind of dropping immediately, I'm just hoping that this doesn't overstay its welcome the way that Marvel Zombies eventually did, like very quickly did. Do you know what I
True.
Mean?
True. Yeah, they had like three sequels.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm interested. I mean, Injustice proved that, like, you know, I really enjoyed reading that series on a, you know, weekly basis. You know, little bite-sized chunks. So I think maybe that'll work for this kind of story structure that he's going for with this one.
It's impressive that DC's so confident about Deceased, because now they're going to have two concurrent Deceased stories going, right? They're going to have Deceased Dead Planet starting June 30th.
Oh, right.
Which mm-hmm. is digital and in comic shops as single issues. And then this series, which is this semi-prequel series time jump thing.
Well, I mean, that first book sold like, that first miniseries sold like gangbusters, right?
Yeah, the first two issues were, I think, the second most sold book of the month about a year ago now.
For sure. And, you know, like he knows what characters to utilize that like don't necessarily get a huge spotlight. And he's doing the same thing with this that he did with Injustice, where he's putting them in situations that seem impossible. I mean, Injustice had Dick Grayson becoming Deadman, and then, you know, Deceased has, you know, Black Canary becoming a Green Lantern, you know, mm-hmm. So he's not afraid to like shake things up with these alternate universe stories. And I'm almost more interested in the ways the characters react to these situations more so than the actual zombie storyline. Like it to me, it feels like an excuse to tell these like wilder stories. And also it like so much of Deceased is about how are we going to escape from this? And it seems like the plot, the point of Hope at World's End is when they take the fight back to Apocalypse, you know what I mean? Like this is, it feels like this is going to be more of a proactive story. So I'm interested to see how that kind of contrasts to what he's done before with this universe.
As an Elseworlds tale, I'm surprised how into it people are because, mm-hmm. you know, usually people are like, oh, well, this isn't my Superman.
Right.
And it doesn't matter to the main universe. But then, I don't know, with 5G coming or not coming and other things going on, like the Dark Knight's Metal or Death Metal, sorry, the sequel series coming out, there's so much that's not conventional DC comics that maybe this is like the new norm that everything's just wild and wacky.
Like, you know, Justice League Dark Apocalypse War just came out and is like 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, and it is as far away from conventional DC storytelling as you could get.
Right.
It is. I mean, have you watched that yet?
I haven't, but I know about the violence.
It's wild. And my, you know, again, it's so funny you mentioned that's not my Superman. My one issue with it is that Superman behaves wildly out of character at the beginning of the film, and then he kind of comes back to himself as it goes along. So I think the trick to these stories is putting these characters in insane, out of their depth, you know, situations, mm-hmm. and then trying to stay true to what we know as, you know, their core values.
Right.
I mean,
they're still familiar, but it's like, oh, wait, let's see what Superman would do if he was in this situation.
Right, exactly. So we've got Unkillables, which has, you know, James Gordon is putting bullets in people's heads, but he's still acting like James Gordon. You know, he's still putting the kids first. He's trying to make sure he takes care of everybody. So mm-hmm. I think that's the trick to telling a good out of continuity story is, sure, put them in these insane situations, but still treat them like the characters that we know.
Right. So you can still kind of connect with them.
Right, exactly.
On some level. Moving on, Marvel Comics has announced their full July release schedule, which includes a couple key X-Men books people were dying for.
Yay. And
Empire number one is finally, you know, on the way.
Finally.
And also, probably even bigger news, Empire is now a weekly series, ?
Oh, yeah.
It was supposed to be monthly, and it was supposed to go through the summer. So they're catching themselves up, I guess, by going mm-hmm. weekly with Empire. What's fascinating to me about this is there are so many tie-ins, some of which still have not shown up in the solicitations or in this July schedule release, that maybe they're just hitting the cutting room floor.
Mm-hmm.
Were you excited by the release schedule?
I am. I'm excited to just get back to, I mean, there's so many, it's wild how many number ones and like different tie-in issues that are coming out that I had forgotten that Spider-Woman had already debuted and then now we're finally getting the second issue. You know, there's so many of these books that have sadly had their like their whole all of their momentum kind of taken out of them, you know. So I'm just excited to pick up where I left off. I'm glad Excalibur's back. I'm glad Miles Morales is back. You know, I'm very excited for Dr. Aphra, as we'll get into in a little bit. Mm-hmm. So
there's
also that they're finally putting out that extended cut of God Loves, Man Kills, which I'm very fascinated by. I don't know if that's going to be a good thing or a bad thing, but we'll see how that turns out. I'm so excited to read that as well.
What's fascinating to me is some of these books were supposed to come out in April,
right?
Like literally a week or two after everything shut down,
right?
And some aren't even on this list yet. They're still in limbo somewhere, sitting in a factory, I'm assuming, because a lot of those April books had to have been already printed.
I reviewed the first issue of Cable back in, I think, the end of March or something like that. And
it's not coming until July 29th.
Number two comes out, at the end of July. And it was originally solicited for February or something like that. It's wild. Like, it really puts into perspective how time has just really gotten away from us this year.
Right, for sure. And then I'm also curious, like Spider-Woman number one was the top selling book of March. Will Spider-Woman number two be the top selling book? One theory Forrest had on that, on the show where we talked about numbers, was, well, maybe Spider-Woman number one was the number one book because everything shut down and people just ended up buying more copies.
That was something that was new. Yeah, but also, and then we're going to see over the next month, you know, that big rollout of Spider-Woman variant covers that were supposed to be on all the, like a bunch of the Marvel books. We're going to see a bunch of those kind of trickling out over the next couple of months instead of all in the same, you know, release schedule, which is kind of interesting because I think there's a Spider-Woman variant for Avengers next week or this week, something like that. But yeah, it is interesting to see, to like literally see in real time, these major companies trying to catch up with themselves, I guess.
It also shows that it came as a complete surprise to them.
Absolutely.
Everything just stopped.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there was a lot of backpedaling and having to figure out either alternate release schedules or just completely stopping. This is like genuinely an unprecedented thing.
Also back next week is Jordan D. White. He'll be on X-Men Monday to talk about what he's been up to during the quarantine. Marauders number 10 comes out next week, so X-Men is back officially as well. So that's exciting. X-Men books. I mean, that's one of the hottest things right now in all comic books.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I've talked about this on the show before. I never would have thought that I'd be so hyped for new X-Men books. You know, it's been a long time. I've been a lapsed X-Men fan for a long time before Hawks and Pox. And, like, I, you know, as soon as I get back into it, it's taken away from me, you know? I'm like, I can't believe I'm, like, chomping at the bit for, you know, for more Excalibur, but I am.
So did you just do like an opposite Godfather thing where you try to get away, but they pull you back in?
That's right. Yeah, exactly. I got back in and they pulled away from me.
In our next bit of news, Duncan Jones's Moon Trilogy is getting its third iteration, its third chapter in comic book format after Moon came out. And then they had that Netflix movie Mute. And now is Maddie. So Moon, Mute, Maddie. Maddie, the full title is Maddie, Once Upon a Time in the Future. He's co-writing with Alex DeCampi. It was kickstarted this week. It made all the money it was going for in, I think, like 5 hours or something insane.
That's wild.
It's a 260-page graphic novel drawn by Glenn Fabry, Simon Beasley, Duncan Fregredo, and Pia Guerra. Oh, and man. It is in partnership with Z2 Comics. I think they'll be publishing it somewhere down the road once it is already backed. Pretty exciting stuff, especially when you look at some of the art that's been revealed.
Oh, yeah.
They also released the first 19 pages of this graphic novel for free for everyone to read. If you go to the AIPTComics.com listing, there's a link to that Dropbox file.
I love Moon so much. And
yeah,
then
it's so good.
Mute, I really enjoyed, but I had these moments where I was like, I don't know that it needs to be set in the future for the story to be told.
But
Duncan Jones has such an interesting visual style, and he gets these really unexpected performances out of his actors. Like Alexander Skarsgård is so good in Mute with, you know, as the title would suggest, no dialogue. And even, you know, Source Code, he's getting weird stuff out of folks like Jake Gyllenhaal and Jeffrey Wright that like you just haven't seen them do before. Like I'm interested to see how this this eye for, you know, smaller performances, you know, comes through in a graphic novel. Cause he loves telling these like intimate stories in these larger than life worlds. So I can't wait to see how this turns out.
Yeah. Their goal was 50,000 and they've already reached 237,000. There's still 26 days to go, so you can still back it. And I think for only, I think $29 you can get a digital. Oh no, a soft cover copy plus shipping. It's not included. Shipping is not included.
I'm gonna have to check that out. This one somehow completely like snuck past me until I saw it in the show notes, and I was like, "What?" You know. And I've just been I've been drooling at this 19 page preview. Yeah, I'm really excited for this. It's got a very 2000 AD vibe to the artwork too. Like that kind of reminds me of some Simon Bisley stuff. Very excited.
Also announced this week is a new Mega Man comic book from Boom Studios.
Yeah.
Called Mega Man Fully Charged. It's based on the TV show, the animated show by AJ Marchisello and Marcus Reinhardt. One of the reasons why I want to talk about this is the art looks sick. It looks so good.
It really does.
Stefano Simeon's art. It's the style of Mega Man. It's like he's a rocket jet. It's so cool.
It's a little bit Astro Boy. Some of it kind of reminds me of Marvel's Swordmaster series. Like there's a very... It's like right in the middle of manga. And then, you know, that kind of... sort of weird watercolory style that they had for the Big Hero 6 animated series, like not the film. That's really what it reminds me of. It's got, I don't know. I really, really dig this. I was very confused when I saw this pop up in the show notes. And then as soon as I saw the artwork, I was like, oh yeah, no, this is so dope.
Have you watched the cartoon? I have never seen it.
I have not. I had not heard about the cartoon, and I was a huge Mega Man kid.
Cartoon Network. It's on
Cartoon Network. It's on. So he's the dude who did the IDW Rogue One book, right? Simeon, right?
That's right.
Yeah, cool.
In other comics meets other mediums news, Jackpot, a movie? It was announced this week via Deadline exclusively that Mark Guggenheim is writing the script to a Jackpot movie set in the Spider-Man Sony Pictures Spider-Man universe.
The Spunk.
Yes, Spunk. As we all know, Morbius was supposed to come out by now. I think it was by now, or this year anyway, and it was delayed till 2021.
I believe it was, I think it was scheduled for July originally.
And I'm going to admit, I think Morbius looked pretty cool. I mean, it had a, spoilers, Michael Keaton reveal in the trailer, which is a little worrisome in that it's like, hey, don't worry. If you don't like Morbius, there's more to this than meets the eye. But they're clearly all in on building out this universe. Now that I've said that, is Jackpot the right choice?
Absolutely. Are you kidding me? I can't walk down the street without seeing people with their Jackpot action figures, their Jackpot beach towels.
This is a character created by Dan Slott and Phil Jimenez back in 2007, I think.
Yeah.
They actually had two iterations of this character, two different women.
Mm-hmm.
And then Guggenheim took on the reins and brought Jackpot back. Can I just say straight up, whenever I saw a Jackpot on the shelf, I thought, oh, Mary Jane's a superhero now.
I had the same thing. But wasn't like the original idea was that was like a literal red herring where you're just like, oh, well, this is clearly, obviously it's going to be revealed that it's Mary Jane. No, it's not.
Right.
It's so, and also, you know, the name, of course, like Tiger, you just hit the jackpot.
Right.
But like, I mean, it's like a few years ago when we were, you know, Sony was toying with the idea of doing an Aunt May film. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that Silver and Black movie is supposedly like in development hell now, the, you know, Silver Sable and Black Cat movie.
Yeah.
It's so weird to me. It would be like if, you know, some other like Lionsgate got the rights to all of the Batman family except for Batman. And so we were watching like an Ace the Bat Hound movie coming out next year or like, I'm saying that like Pennyworth isn't a television show that like is currently in its second season. But it's just so strange to me. I mean, Morbius kind of works for me because it's got a built-in like... He's more of a long-running character. He's got sort of a rogues gallery. You can tie him into some of the other horror characters. Mm-hmm. But like Jackpot, I mean, are we going to watch a movie with Jackpot versus Boomerang? And like, I just can't imagine what this movie would be.
What's the draw? I mean, I get they want to like build out more characters in this universe and do some wink, wink, nod, nods. I'm sure Spider-Man will swing into a scene and swing out really quickly.
Yeah.
But like, there's no fan base for Jackpot at all.
I can't.
And most people don't even hardcore comic readers don't know who she is. I mean, I had to look her up because I forgot.
You said Jack. Yeah. Because I saw the thing about a Jackpot movie. And the first thing I thought was, what was the character that was like social media obsessed? Like there was another.
Oh, in the video game, like?
Yeah.
I forget her name.
I was thinking about that character. And then I, it's just very strange. I can't.
This would be like if the Snyder Cut comes out. I had to bring it up. And
thank you.
The entire movie is about Aztec. And uh-huh. You're like, what? And Warner Brothers is like, yeah, this is the Snyder Cut all along. What are you talking about?
Yeah, at the end of the whole movie, that would be amazing.
Wouldn't it?
The movie ends with Bruce, or like the movie begins with Bruce Wayne deciding he can't put together the Justice League, and the rest of the movie is Aztec versus the Tyrant Sun, and that's just like 3 hours of that.
I'd watch that.
I would too. I'd watch the hell out of an Aztec movie.
I just think it'd be hilarious. All these people who are burning their Justice League copies right now are probably like, they would just lose it. I don't know what they'd lose faith in life, I suppose.
Oh my God. I want to live in that world where the Aztec movie came out.
It'll happen eventually, I'm sure. Although at the rate Warner Brothers is going with their movies, probably not in our lifetimes.
Anymore. Right. Oh, I was thinking of Screwball. That's the character I was thinking of.
Oh, when that's you said, right. Screwball, yeah. In the Spider-Man PS4 video game.
Yeah, yep. I would watch a Screwball movie.
That'd be funny.
Emma Roberts as Screwball. I'd watch that.
Sandra Bullock.
Oh my God. She's an America's sweetheart.
How dare you? Okay, so I have to say, you know, we've done this show for about 7 weeks without new comics.
Uh-huh.
A lot of negative news. This week, we've been giving you a lot of positive news up until this point, so we have to give you some negative news to bring it down a notch, because I think I just feel like the audience is a little too happy right now.
Right, and so me too. I'm very happy.
IDW has turned a bunch of their furloughs into layoffs. Managing editor Denton Timpton, associate publisher David Hedgecock, senior graphic artist Gilbert Lozcano, a few others, they've all been laid off by IDW, which is very sad news. It's probably going to continue. We know that Marvel has got some furloughs going still that haven't turned into layoffs, but they possibly could. It's just kind of like the state of the world right now.
And exactly. That's happening in a lot of places right now. They're trying to make ends meet because they've been, you know, not active for this long.
Right.
I know IDW did bring back in a lot of the folks who were furloughed, but unfortunately they cut ties on a lot. I wonder if they're going to end up like reshuffling a lot of positions as well, because it just seems like, I mean, managing editor and senior graphic artist, like you're gonna have to figure out something to
just give it to an intern.
Like what's the next move? I mean, it's everything. That's the biggest problem right now. I mean, one of the biggest problems is that just everything feels so uncertain. As cool as it is that we're getting books back on the shelves, like there's still so many things up in the air. Like, oh, can I still go into a shop? You know, I have a feeling. I mean, I hate to be like Debbie Downer, but you're right. This isn't going to be the last time we hear about layoffs at some of our favorite companies.
It's a weird time too, because, you know, all the books that are going to be coming out next week and then in June were books that were probably already partially created and sitting in a warehouse you know, were set to come out no matter what. So like there's this weird downtime where we're getting new books, but there were books that were supposed to come out 2 or 3 months ago.
Right, exactly.
But we'll be keeping track of what's going on with industry. Smaller publishers like IDW, of course, can't necessarily keep people on too, right? They have less revenue coming in, especially at IDW where they've had some issues with, you know, bringing in revenue and trying to make movies. I think we talked a lot about that last year.
Right,
on this podcast. But back to good news.
Yes.
Marvel released their full August solicitations. They have not done that in 2 months because no one knew if there would be new comics coming out. It's pretty exciting to see solicitations come out from Marvel, and in a minute we'll be talking about the DC solicitations. But a couple of the titles that were in their solicitations were revealed last week, like Maestro, a new 5-part series by Peter David to finally shed some light on Maestro's origin story, like we were all demanding.
Yeah.
Sarcasm. I'm sure it'll be cool nonetheless, but when Marvel started when they started posting early solicit info last week, I was like, uh-oh, we're in for it.
Right.
August is coming, and they're going to start releasing all this info. There's some surprises in their solicitations, too.
Yeah.
But a lot of these books were already solicited and supposed to come out by now, so not a huge surprise across the board. I mean, right. Iron Man 2020 was definitely supposed to be done by now, and we're getting the sixth issue, the sixth and final issue of that right. miniseries in August. Did you have a chance to look through it all? And
yeah, see any big there's surprises? Some. I mean, there's some fun stuff. It's great seeing the some of the cover art with the stuff I just didn't expect to see, like Cosmic Ghost Rider throwing down with the Hulk and Spider-Man, and on that yes. Fantastic Four cover, that Captain Marvel cover with the I think this is the Spider-Woman variant that I was talking about, where they're still slowly coming out. Mm-hmm. There was one I was really excited about. Oh yeah, Spider-Woman punching a Triceratops in the face. Yeah, just a lot of fun stuff coming up that I'm very excited for. I'm also morbidly curious about Fantastic Four Antithesis, the Mark Waid, Neil Adams miniseries.
I hope it's really weird and wacky.
The cover art makes it look like they're gonna go to some dark places. So I mean, it's the thing holding what looks to be a melting version of the Silver Surfer. Mm-hmm.
Apparently Neil Adams has never done a Fantastic Four story.
He's done like shorts, I think. I don't think he's ever done a full length story. I think he did like maybe he's done stuff for like anthologies, I think. But yeah, he's never done like a full like series, I guess. Like this is gonna be like his first like major Fantastic Four project, which seems impossible, right?
I know, right? He's been around forever.
I'm also excited about Phantom X, because I'll always yes. love Phantom X,
the X-Men giant.
Yeah,
I have to say, I was happy to see Charles Soule and Jesus Saez's Star Wars coming back. It's been issue 4 came out March 18th. It's not issue 5 is solicited mm-hmm. for August. That's 5 month delay. That's crazy to me.
Yeah.
Maybe this is good news though, in a sense. Not that it is a good news thing, but I mean, Jesus Saez, amazing mm-hmm. artist.
Absolutely.
But usually needs a gap to catch up, like most amazing artists do. Sure. So maybe we'll get a 12 issue arc of Jesus Saez's art.
Yeah. Oh, the other thing I was excited about is that that Larry Hama Eye Wolverine, the 2020 oh, yeah. tie-in, mm-hmm. just because I really enjoy Larry Hama's Wolverine run. Yeah. And so having a story about Albert and LCD is really exciting.
That should be wacky and weird too.
Yeah, I'm excited for that. I mean, the cover art is very like techno-organic, gross body horror stuff, so I think it's going to be a fun time.
There's some cool X-Men collections coming out, too. There's a New Mutants omnibus coming.
Oh, yeah.
There's also The God Loves, Man Kills, which the you just
extended
mentioned.
Extended cut, yeah.
That's getting collected in August, is really quick.
I was about to make a really bad joke.
The single issues just came out. Or I haven't even come out, but they will be just coming out.
Right. Do you think in the extended cut, Kitty Pryde says more racial slurs?
Hopefully they fix that.
Hopefully that's like one thing that they're just like, oh yeah, no, this is entirely tone deaf.
Oh, I forgot to tell you, Rob Liefeld's getting a new Deadpool collection. So,
oh, good.
Yeah. Yeah, I know you've been dying for that.
I have. Oh yeah, I'm also excited for the Daredevil One More Day, the Daredevil annual.
Yes.
I'm loving Zdarsky's Daredevil, so I'm very excited to see where this goes.
Also, Fallen Angels is finally getting collected after a long gap where most of the other titles have already been collected.
Mm-hmm. I love that this half of this episode has just been us being like, oh my God, we can read these stories again.
I know, right? Oh, one more thing I want to point out. Sure. Jonathan Hickman's Avengers is getting a complete collection series.
I'm so hype about that. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that
should be cool. So if you want to see all the solicitations, go to aftcomics.com. where we have every cover and solicitation in list format. Moving on to our last, yes, that's right, last piece of news. DC Comics has announced DC Connect.
Right.
A new solicitations format for them, which before was DC Preview, which was, mm-hmm. again, I just want to point out, like, I think it was 2016 or 17 now, DC stopped sending solicitations to Comic Book Press and just posted it all digitally online. And now in this new format, also digitally online, where you can actually, for free, download DC Connect as a PDF file.
Yeah, and it's more of like a magazine format with interviews and stuff. I'm excited about this. I think that's pretty rad.
This is a cool idea. Yeah.
I will say, so the cover art for DC Connect number one is the Joker. And can we retire the crowbar iconography. Like, he did it one time, like, yeah. Like, and it's just become like shorthand for look how wacky this guy is. It's very weird to me.
I need you to make a promise with me.
Uh-huh.
If you or I ever write a DC Batman comic,
the Joker will never touch a crowbar.
He will kill Robin with a toaster. Promise me you will write that into it. And then when we become DC president or whatever publisher, we will push Joker toaster, bloody toaster iconography across all books every
year.
He's
just holding it under his arm like a football.
And then when we both retire, or one of us retires, if one of us makes it, we will then on our deathbed or whatever. Oh, yes, we're dying and retiring on the same day.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
We will let the world know we used this toaster iconography to change the world.
I just, I mean, again, like I think about, so I'm a big video game guy. And every time the Joker is in a fighting game, he has a crowbar as like his melee weapon or his like finisher or whatever. And I'm just I'm so sick of it. He used it like one time, like very notably in the comics. And now every time someone wants to be like, oh, this is serious, it's, it'd be like if every single time we saw the Joker in something, he was wearing the Hawaiian shirt from The Killing Joke. I'm over it. I'm also,
you know, that was making the rounds on Comics Twitter this week as well, the Hawaiian shirt.
Really?
I guess Jeff Johns mentioned it because it's going to show up in the Three Jokers.
That's the other thing. The Three Jokers at this point has become the Snyder cut for me, where I just want it to be out so I never have to think about it again.
I mean, it's like Doomsday Clock 2.0, right?
Yeah.
It took 2 years to put out a series that was supposed to come out in 1 year.
Also, both of these stories, both Doomsday Clock and Three Jokers, were first teased in DC Rebirth number one.
Right.
So it's like, it's just, I'm ready to move on from the Three Jokers.
He had that label too. Do you remember 2 years ago at Comic-Con, San Diego Comic-Con, he revealed,
he said that the Killzone, because he's like,
Killing Zone.
Yeah, it's still, yeah, and Killing apparently Zone. That's still a thing. It's just not.
Is it?
I saw a thing on CVR recently where he had told someone that, like, yeah, no, it's not. It hasn't been canceled. I just haven't done anything with it. And I was like, then don't announce it.
So,
like,
yeah, right, exactly. And that was supposed to come out last May 2019.
Yeah.
It was supposed to start, and of course it never did.
And Three Jokers is a black label book, right? Bizarre about it.
Right. Yeah, Three Jokers is a black label book now. And if you open up the DC solicitations, you can find a link on apgcomics.com. On the first page or second page after the cover, DC has a ratings label guide.
Yeah.
And it's kind of interesting. There's the DC logo, and then at the top is DC Kids, and it tells you ages 8 to 12. Then DC Young Adults, which is ages 13 plus. Then DC, which is also ages 13 plus. That's odd. And then it's Black Label, which is ages 17 plus. Where would Killing Zone end up in this if it was actually a label like the other label? Yeah, right.
DC, yeah.
So many dongs, baby. Yeah, that's what we want.
We're DC Comics, and we fuck.
NC-17. Oh, man. I'm assuming Killing Zone would be like a universe inside DC Black Label.
I mean, I maybe. I was on the episode where, like, the week after Vertigo was retired, and I'm still just like, what have we accomplished by retiring these tried and true names and replacing them with other, you know, other mastheads, you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't,
right.
it seems so not thought out to me. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. I mean, DC Black Label's had some interesting titles since their interesting unveiling with Batman Damned. But yeah, it's like, you've got decades of tried and true titles, creators that are, you know, going to end up becoming, you know, considered one of the greatest creators of all time, writing Vertigo books, and now Vertigo's just dead.
Weren't we talking about this where, like, DC had, like, when the movie version of The Kitchen came out, they had commissioned a title card for DC Vertigo, and then that only exists in The Kitchen.
Right, exactly, yeah.
Like, there's going to be a Sandman series on Netflix that doesn't have a Vertigo label in front of it. That's insane.
Right. Right. I kind of feel like they should just slap it on the Sandman Netflix show.
I think the Sandman Netflix show should have the title card from the kitchen in front of it. It should just be like from the people who brought you the kitchen. Sandman.
Everyone will know what that is.
Yeah, for sure.
So back to the DC solicitations.
Right. Yes.
I'm cutting you off. I'm cutting you off.
No, go for it. You're absolutely done. I'm done.
No. Did you have a chance to look at these at all? There's some interesting things in here. Of course, Joker War is taking up the spotlight for August DC books. It's running across all titles pretty much.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited for the
Harley Quinn.
I'm excited for the Dreaming Waking Hours.
Mariko Tamaki's Wonder Woman starts with Wonder Woman number 760. That's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor's Harley Quinn and the Birds of Prey gets its third issue. So we've only seen the first issue of that so far.
Right.
And that, did you like Strange Adventures?
I haven't gotten a chance to check it out yet. I keep, it seems like it would be right up my alley, but it just hasn't, have not checked that out just yet. Mm-hmm. I'm very curious about Death Metal because I think I've talked about this before. I didn't feel like metal completely held together for me. So I'm interested to see what an even more insane version of metal looks like. I'm excited for the Swamp Thing Twin Branches graphic novel. I've really been loving the DC Inc. Line. Like, all of these have been just so good.
Gotham. I'm kind of surprised Sean Murphy is taking over Catwoman number 24.
That's an interesting choice for
not
sure.
Not drawing, he's co-writing.
Right.
Doing the covers.
I get very frustrated with big tie-ins. I mean, I've talked about this before as well. I have trouble sussing out what's important and what isn't. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That was my biggest issue with Year of the Villain was it was such an amorphous event that all the books that I was following came to a halt basically so that they could address it and then barely did, like Batwoman, the new creative team, or not Batwoman, the new creative team for Batgirl came in right when Year of the Villain was starting, and so their first arc had to be a tie-in instead of, kind of establishing the new status quo. So it's just, it's very strange. The thing I'm most excited about, honestly, is the Dreaming Waking Hours, G. Willow Wilson, the fact that it's returning to having William Shakespeare as a character. I mean, there's so many little, sweet spots that just the cover art hits for me as a fan of The Dreaming and Sandman in general that I'm very excited for that.
Nice. There's a Transmetropolitan Absolute Edition coming out too.
I know.
That's in December, but it's in the solicitation.
Didn't we have someone reviewed Super Sons, right? The Polar Shield project. Did we have someone review that for the site?
Yeah, I think I did the first one and someone else did the second one.
Yeah, I've heard it's fun. I haven't...
It is.
Looking forward to checking that out, too.
Well, that's it for news, folks. Next, we are going to be talking about the top books of last week. Our favorite two comic books out last week. That's right. We could each pick two books.
I know.
And there's still other books we
didn't
pick.
Isn't it great?
To start the segment, we always talk about comicbookroundup.com's top critic and fan pick. And this week, top critic pick was Lost on Planet Earth number 2. With a 9.2. Mm-hmm. The top fan pick was Hawkeye Free Fall number 5 with a 9.2. You might know something about that, Nathan, but I don't want to spoil it. What is your second favorite book of last week?
My second favorite book of last week was Red Sonja number 15, written by Mark Russell, art by Bob Q. I'm really loving this Red Sonja series. I'm finally catching up on it. I reviewed, I think, like the first 4 or 5 issues for the site, and then life got in the way. So it's been really nice catching up on that recently and having a new issue like coming out. It's really such a smart series. It plays on, it feels a little bit like a political drama. Sonja has been thrust into this leadership role that she doesn't want, but she has this, massive need to protect her people. There's different factions going to war. It feels like all the best parts of Game of Thrones. there's some really great, there's one line that she has. I had to pull this up, but it's, if you have to choose between betraying the living and betraying the dead, always choose the dead. They tend to take it better. It's literally like, having to, you know, decide who, you know, if you're going to keep honoring the people who have fallen or moving forward and trying to protect the people that you're, you know, that you have to hold on to. She's literally trading with psychopaths in order to feed her people. And, she's become like this master of war for a competing army just so that she can send supplies back home. It's really wild, and it's not what you'd expect from a Red Sonja book, which is normally, you know, very much, you know, let's kick some ass kind of vibe. I mean, if you want that, you can get that in the Vampirella Red Sonja series, which I'm really enjoying as well. But the, this, I don't know, it really presents like a much more mature take on the character and the world. And you still get those flashes of excitement and action through flashback sequences that kind of fill you in on how she got to this point. Mm-hmm. Bob Q's artwork is just so good. There's just some really wild set pieces and architecture. I'd definitely recommend checking it out.
Nice. Yeah, comics are back, baby. It's
exciting. Yeah. What was your number two?
My number two was Star Number 4 by mm-hmm. Kelly Thompson and a group of artists, but Philip Andrade and Javier Pena were listed as the top two artists on the book. This is an interesting character that probably is less familiar for most.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, she was introduced in Captain Marvel, in Kelly Thompson's Captain Marvel series, mm-hmm. as a type. I'm just going to say it. She was Superman. She was a female reporter that gets powers like Superman, but ends up being bad. And at the end of that arc, spoilers, Thompson has Captain Marvel rip her heart out, but she doesn't die. And mm-hmm. in this fourth issue, we start to unravel why she's having these strange powers. And they're tied to a certain kind of stone in the Marvel Universe.
Oh.
Yeah. And...
Sorry.
Oh, I like that. That was good. Stones. I need more reactions like that while I talk. Like, there's an audience here. Anyone who reads this book will immediately notice that the Black Order shows up, and they kind of look and act like they would from the Avengers movies, which is a cool aspect to it. There's some good humor in here. I think overall why it's my second favorite book of the week was because Kelly Thompson's so very good at the superhero action you're expecting,
mm-hmm.
the nice little bits of humor here and there littered in like you would see in a movie. I think Kelly mm-hmm. Thompson nails that like movie kind of feel to a superhero title where there's good action, there's good character moments.
Yes.
I wouldn't be surprised if someday Kelly Thompson writes a Marvel movie.
That's one of the things I'm really loving about Thompson's Sabrina the Teenage Witch is mm-hmm. I was like, I would watch this television show. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not actually super wild about the Chilling Adventures series on Netflix, but I was like, I would watch this series where she's fighting, you know, a giant kraken and then also has to find time to figure out which of the boys she's going to go date. Like it's, I don't know, but it's like these cute little humor moments mixed in with very human drama and then big set pieces. Yeah.
Perfect.
You
nailed it right there.
Big Thompson fan. I also was a huge fan of Kelly Thompson's Jim and the Holograms for the same reason. It was just very, very family and friend focused. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, had these kind of wilder concepts like sprinkled throughout as well.
I'd like to see Star stick around, but it's the kind of character that it probably doesn't have a huge fan base yet. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's only been around for a little bit of time. And she does kind of have that feel of other characters, like a Superman type character. Mm-hmm. But this issue started to make me believe maybe there's a lot more complexity to her powers and thus more complexity to what you can do with it.
Sure.
It is a Kelly Thompson creation too, so... maybe only Kelly Thompson will handle it, which is a good thing sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, it's like James Robinson, you know, dropping the mic on Starman. You know, no one's touched Jack Knight in 20 years, you know?
Right. What was your favorite book of last week?
My favorite book of last week was Hawkeye Freefall number 5, written by Matthew Rosenberg, art by Otto Schmidt. This miniseries has been super fun. It's felt at times a little unfocused because there's so many ideas in every issue to the point where time travel is very casually used in like issue number three. Mm-hmm. So it's moments like that where I'm just like, oh man, I could use a little more time with this bit or this bit. But one of the things that's really been striking me about this book is I didn't really understand the meaning behind the title until very recently, because it does feel like Clint keeps making decisions that keep getting away from him. Everything he does is with the best intentions, but he's doing it all the wrong ways. And Hawkeye, the number five, is where it feels like everything's finally catching up with him. Mm. To the point where I'm very interested to see how he makes things right, or if he even can. And it's just been really fun. The dialogue is very cheeky, but the book still takes its characters seriously, which I think is a fun juggle. It's something that I really enjoyed about Rosenberg's Multiple Man, where it was, you know, occasionally very goofy, but it also had a very strong emotional through line. So I think this one's been actually extended to a seventh issue, right?
Oh, I'm not sure.
But anyway, I'm just glad this miniseries is back. I know it. Excuse me. I'm glad the miniseries is back. I know that the last two issues are going direct to digital, right, which is kind of a bummer. This was one of the previously mentioned things that was on my pull list, and now I'm gonna just, I guess, buy the trade when it comes out or something. But it's just fun. I love Hawkeye when he's not, you know, putting an arrow in Bruce Banner's eye and acting like a monster. I don't know. I think it's a worthy successor to the Matt Fraction run, and I'm just really enjoying seeing how fucked things are getting for Clint, and I don't know. It keeps me guessing because it really does feel like Free Fall is such an accurate title, because it really does feel like Hawkeye is making this up as he goes along. So that's been very fascinating. It's also fun to see a character like the Hood being portrayed as kind of a total idiot who managed to have these insane powers. So
I've never liked that character.
Me neither.
I never understood the character. And then when I read the first issue of the series and the way Rosenberg was depicting him, I was like, hell yeah, this guy relates to me.
Yeah.
On some level.
Yeah, that was the thing. The two series that I've enjoyed the Hood as a character both kind of take the piss out of him. I really like how he's presented in Free Fall. And Max Bemis's Fool Killer miniseries also did a similar thing, where it's just like, yeah, this is just some asshole who got a magic cape. Like, and I love that. I actually really love that. I was like, this dude would be nothing without this cape. But yeah, so that was my favorite book of the week. What was yours?
I have to say, before I move on to my book, I love seeing Otto Schmidt working at Marvel, and then thinking about how he and Benjamin Percy kind of made their chops with Green Arrow back in 2016.
Sure.
2016. Yeah, 2016. And like thinking about how, like, I used to review every single issue of that series, and at the time they were like small potatoes, but it's like they're rising up. It's cool to see creators, you know, move along, get bigger books. You know, even though this book is going to end eventually, I mean, I'm sure he'll stay at Marvel.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
But yeah, my favorite book was Plunge number 3 by Joe Hill and Stuart Immonen, nice, with colors by Dave Stewart. This series, I've loved this series. The first issue was a little wordy and slow, but it's really picked up.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like really interesting blend of mathematics and horror.
one thing that I hate and one thing that I love.
But if you put them together,
right,
like cereal and milk, Plunge number 3, like cereal and milk.
Yeah.
No, this issue starts to give us answers, but at the same time, you know, forces us to ask new questions.
Mm-hmm.
There's a really good sense of dread and mystery that is chilling.
Mm-hmm.
There is, I don't want to spoil anything, but there is a group of characters that are supposedly trustworthy, but you know they're not. And mm-hmm. the sub-characters that aren't the bad guys are a little wary of what's happening, but also unsure of how they can proceed without working with these mysterious fellows. Stuart Immonen's art is impressive. His ability to do like character acting and facial expressions are just so perfect for a book like this. Hill is writing a good deal of dialogue, but you never feel like it's overly stuffed or overly wordy,
right?
Because of that character acting and how you're so tapped into what's going on with these people.
Yeah, I haven't read the newest issue yet. I read the first two, and the thing that struck me about it was that it doesn't go for scares. It's more of a feeling. Like it's very there's an unease about the whole storyline. This is another one that I think is going to read really well in trade. Because it's not dense, but it is very like, I don't know. It goes for a very specific vibe that I feel like if you're just dropping in into a single issue, it's almost impossible to like get back into it, especially after a few months. So I'm looking forward to reading. When I pick number three up, I'm going to just reread the first two before this one. So, that's awesome. I'm glad you're enjoying that series. I mean, all the Hill House stuff I've been very happy with.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. It's impressive how they pulled off so many
quality sort of books,
but also quality books. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
absolutely.
And it's a different kind of horror too. It's not like jump scares and stuff.
Right. Yeah.
I could see Plunge being a TV show.
Oh, sure.
It's got that chilling, like think of like a cloudy day in like on an island off of the United Kingdom where there's a bit of drizzle spattering your face and you're just cold enough where you want to go in, but you're not cold enough to be like rushing in.
That sounds perfect. That sounds like a perfect day.
That's a perfect day. I don't like it being too hot myself. But yeah, the series I think is going to be an impressive one when read all collected too.
Yeah, for sure.
But I would recommend reading each issue just because it's just so high quality stuff.
Oh, and Dave Stewart's colors are great too.
Oh, for sure.
Like
one of the best.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it has a whole very, like you're saying, like a very murky vibe to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I dig it.
Gotta love it when Dave Stewart drops those orange eyes and those
yes.
Mike Mignola books.
Yes.
That's like my favorite.
Yep.
Moving on, in our next segment, top books for next week. That's right, there are more books coming out next week.
Bless.
We are going to detail the number one book we're looking forward to out next week. Mm-hmm. Nathan, you have the honors. Go first, please.
Oh, heck. I'm really excited for Dr. Aphra number one, written by Alyssa Wong and artwork by Marika Cresta. I just really enjoyed the first Dr. Aphra series, and I'm really excited to see how the character bounces back, because all of the Star Wars books have taken that jump to post New Hope, you know, or post you know, they're all just kind of in the not post New Hope, post Empire. And I'm from the previews that I've read of the first issue, it has a very kind of Mandalorian vibe, because one of the things that I loved about the Mandalorian is that it explores how shitty it is to live in a power vacuum, like after the fall of a regime. Like, it's a good thing that the Empire's taken a hit, but like, you know, Dr. Aphra and her team are literally have to deal with the fact that there's no jobs. Like, the Empire's spending all of its resources hunting down the rebels, and they've burned as many bridges as possible that no one wants to work with them, you know, after the events of, you know, Screaming Citadel and all that stuff. So I'm really excited to see how this series kind of circumvents that and finds new adventures for all of them to get into. I think Dr. Aphra is a fascinating character that didn't quite work for me at the start, because I guess, you know, we all take for granted that like Han Solo is like a quote unquote lovable criminal, but Dr. Aphra is like a straight up fucking hardcore criminal. Like, so,
right.
So it was like for a while I was just like, I don't want to read a story about someone who's mean. Like, but no, there's something very fun about her and the crew that she's put together. Yeah. So I'm excited to get back into that world, that seedy part of the Star Wars universe. And I think, nice. I think having watched The Mandalorian now, I feel even more susceptible to that. I just want to see like the less glamorous side of the galaxy.
Yeah, for sure. I love the arc. Mm-hmm. I love the fact that she's exploring a different kind of aspect of the Star Wars universe too, right?
Absolutely.
Like, since she's an archaeologist.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I always thought,
like, oh, this could be the Indiana Jones of Star Wars.
Yeah, and it there's parts of that first series that really lean into that. And again, there were times where, unfortunately, they had to deal with, like, tie-ins and miniseries, like the Screaming Citadel, which is still a cool story, but it doesn't... That's the closest they've gotten to, like, a... Yeah, like an Indiana Jones in the Star Wars universe, because we're going into, like, kind of old god territory and weird mythology that doesn't really get explored on screen. So yeah, I'm excited. I'm hoping that this series kind of deals a little more with that, like kind of takes them away. The thing that I'm most excited about with the films now is that we're ostensibly done with the Skywalker story.
We hope.
Yeah. And so I'm hoping that, like, this series kind of does that too, where, like, let's just go off and do our own thing.
Right.
And it seems to be leaning in that direction. So I'm cautiously very optimistic about it, because I just think it's a fascinating character.
This book in particular was supposed to come out the week comics were canceled.
Yeah.
So, like, it's been a long time running for this one.
Yeah. I'd put it on my pull for
the first week of April.
That's right. Yeah. Holy cow.
My most anticipated book out next week is Venom number 25 by Donny Cates and Mark Bagley. But wait, there's more. It's an extra sized issue, and David Michelin and Ron Lim are doing a backup story.
Right.
In the same issue.
Which is the 90s dream team right there.
It sure is. We have a lot to thank to them for clones and whatnot. If you grew up in the 90s. So this is the end to the Venom Island story arc that Mark Bagley and Kate started. Of course, the island in question is the same very island that Venom and Spider-Man fought way back in the 90s. So it's an iconic place, location. This is the end of the arc, too, where in the beginning of this arc, Captain America literally asks Venom, Eddie Brock, if he'd like to be on the Avengers. So...
Right.
Donny Cates is, like, clearly done a lot to build up Eddie Brock. He's probably he's a much more fleshed out character than he ever was before he took on the character.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You've got Null in the background that's hovering and eventually going to attack everyone in the Marvel Universe, I'm sure, probably next summer in the big event that is yet to be named. So this issue, in a lot of ways, is wrapping up Absolute Carnage, which was, of course, the mini event happened last August.
Right.
Since it's sort of pulling in a couple ideas like Eddie Brock's son and his powers, what's going on with Null, but also wrapping up Carnage in itself, because it's all about Venom versus Carnage on this island and that final battle as Cletus Cassidy is dead, but the Carnage symbiote still exists. So how will that wrap up and end? And it's putting to bed the Carnage symbiote's collection of codexes, which made the character like a god. So it's a nice book to come back to now that comic shops are getting books again, because it's wrapping up this Venom thing, so we can let that all go and move on into 2021 finally. even though we're halfway through it. And then the David Michelinie and Ron Lim stories, again, it's set on the island, so it's a nice little fun, you know, oh, we never knew that Venom had this little adventure.
Nice, okay.
It's clearly sprouting out of the ideas Donny Cates added to bring Eddie Brock back to the island, so it's kind of a neat idea. I wonder if it was always intended to be an extra-sized issue, or if it was something they decided on with the gap. I'm not sure.
Oh, maybe. Yeah. I mean, I mean, 25 is a good landmark issue to do something like that, especially if you're wrapping up enough stuff.
Yeah. So yeah, we both picked Marvel. What are we but Marvel fans, I guess.
I know. And well, also Marvel just has a really heavy output next week too. Comparatively.
In our next segment, Judging by the Cover, Junior, we're going to pick our favorite cover art. Now, you can see this cover on the podcast listing, also on the little icon of the podcast. I'm going to go first.
Yes, I love this freaking cover.
You know what? Symmetry, it's everything.
Yeah.
For me, if you got symmetry and some nice warm oranges, you've sold me. I was born in September. I'm a fall guy. Come on. anyway, sorry. Batman Beyond number 43 by Francis Manapul has our favorite Batman Beyond character, Batman Beyond, walking towards us. Did you like that?
Batman Beyond's breakout character, Terry McGinnis, Batman. Yeah,
exactly. there's some really cool blue cave-like edges in the foreground, Batman's in the mid-ground, and then behind him is all cast in orange and yellow, the Batcave. Yeah. We see Bruce in the background with his dog. We see some computers. We see some nice windows displaying some costumes. I never understood why Batman was so into displaying things when he's all about the business and getting those detective, you know, being the detective that he is and getting the mystery solved. And yet he has a giant coin. Anyway, that's neither here nor there.
I also greatly appreciate the suits in the background, which are partially the animated series suits. Like there's the broad chested Bruce Timm gray Batman suit. There's the very simplified Nightwing design from animated series that I love.
That's a nice throwback.
There's some really cool small touches on this cover too.
Everyone loves the Batman Beyond costume, right?
It's great. It is genuinely great. And I love how high up the logo goes in this image.
I know,
too.
Right? Like, it's going all the way up to those shoulder muscles.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And he's got calves like damn.
And really scary looking claws on those hands.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a great cover. I love that costume. So any time, and I love Manapul's artwork. So anytime those two come together, I'm very happy.
I don't know why Warner Brothers hasn't pushed for a movie.
They almost did in the 90s or like early 2000s. We almost got a Batman Beyond movie. It was being developed around the same time as Aronofsky's Year One, and then neither of those happened.
Mm. Has there been a Spider-Man 2099 and Batman Beyond collab? There hasn't, right?
No, but you know what's so funny is I think it was maybe Chris Sims in the Comics Alliance days was talking about how the thing that's so great about Batman Beyond is that he's what if Spider-Man was Batman? Even all the villains are like one to one. Like he has a Kraven the Hunter in Stalker. Mm-hmm. He's got a Venom as Ink. He's got his nemesis is a green billionaire who owns his own company.
Right.
Like it's pretty great when you like kind of line them up one to one like that. Which is kind of like the funny thing about how when Spider-Man Unlimited came out and it just kind of felt like more Batman Beyond, like that cartoon series.
Right.
To the point where Spider-Man had a cape.
Yeah, you're so right. It's got to happen someday. I mean,
I'd love it. Oh my God.
I guess DC and Marvel are not doing those crossovers, though.
Wouldn't that be the best way to come back from? I think Gail Simone was talking about this on Twitter. Wouldn't that be the best way to come back from like a recession is to like do another DC versus Marvel?
Yeah. Like, or a Marvel universe?
Yeah. I'd go nuts for that.
Well, did you go nuts for a cover art this week?
I did. Ooh. I am really into the cover art for Rogue Planet number one, illustrated by Andy McDonald. There's something about, I think this might be the third or fourth time I've picked like Lovecraftian goopy shit for like judging by the cover, but there's something about this cover art that is just, you know, an impossible number of eyes, mouths where there shouldn't be mouths, tentacles that kind of look like veins. I really can't quite describe why this works for me, but there's just something like primally upsetting about this. Mm. The shading on the skull inside of a space helmet, like there's cracks in the skull, like it looks like it's been there for a long time. Everything's kind of being constricted. This is a cover that if I saw it on the stand, I would immediately grab this book and just be like, what is happening in this? Mm-hmm. It looks like a nightmare. It looks like a space nightmare, which will, you know, tie in very well with something I'm going to talk about in a minute. But, I don't know. There's something very, otherworldly about this image that really appeals to me.
Nice. Yeah, it's pretty cool. I got to review the book actually.
Ago. What'd you think?
Solid book, solid horror book. Cool. Really well developed characters by Colin.
Cool. Bunn. Yeah, I really like Bunn's writing, so I'm excited to check this one out.
You know what I'm excited to check out?
What's that?
Your off-topic top shelf, our last segment of the show. Nathan, tell us what you're into that's not comics related right now.
So I got a couple things. The thing that I'm really into right now is this film Blood Machines that just came out.
Yeah.
It is a sort of a spiritual sequel to a music video from a few years back. This band Carpenter Brut that does like dark synth wave kind of stuff, very 80s, reminiscent of like John Carpenter scores with like a more of a focus on like slightly more dubstepier beats. I'm very particular when it comes to electronic music. So, but it, like this stuff has a very like 80s horror movie vibe to it that I really dig. So they did this music video that was insane. It's like a sci-fi chase sequence for a song called Turbo Killer. And that kind of went viral a few years ago. And this movie just came out on Shudder. And actually, Nathaniel Muir reviewed it for the site. But it's a... It's so hard to describe what this is because it feels like a full-length music video in portions, but the idea is that it follows souls escaping from spaceships and turning on the people that have enslaved them to carry out wars.
Yeah.
It's sort of a sci-fi version of... it explores themes of oppression and sexism and... there's moments where it feels a little too heavy-handed, and then there's moments where it feels very much. It's occasionally a little too literal when it comes to the dialogue, but when there's no dialogue is when the movie actually like is perfect. Very strange. There's just some really great visual storytelling. It's unlike anything I've seen before. There's some very heavy CGI, but they also do stuff with like models and chroma key backgrounds and different like mixed media. But it's one of those few moments where it's not style over substance, where it's where the style is the substance, if that makes sense. The score for it is maybe my favorite album I've heard all year so far. It's a trip. The weird thing is that Shudder has, the movie was clearly made as like a 50 minute film, and Shudder has split it into three separate episodes. So it's like one episode 17 minutes, one's like 20 minutes, you know. But the result of that is that the second episode begins with the opening credits of what would be the movie. So it's a very like weird way that they've decided. It's very similar to me trying to figure out why Boom was putting out Wind as a limited series.
It sounds problematic.
Well, yeah, it's an odd way to do it. I kind of wish that there was an option to just watch it straight through because it does feel like an attempt to just put more content out there instead of...
Oh, true.
So, but I believe you can actually watch the full film in one sitting on YouTube. I will say it's extremely not safe for work. There's a lot of nudity in the film to the point where there's a shot in the movie that reminded me of that episode of South Park where Stan's dad is like having the heavy metal hallucinations where he's just driving through like naked Frazetta paintings. But it's definitely worth checking out. It's a trip. I'm ready to watch it again just so I can kind of like understand it a little more. There's just a lot going on there. If you want to check out the review of Blood Machines on our site, Nathaniel actually summed it up pretty well. He said this, you know, the story is visually stunning. Typical narrative structure is simply broken down into segments, which makes it more palatable. But he says the music does not so much add to the story as it is the story. The synth based beats are as colorful as the direction and match the retro tone. It's really worth watching on, don't watch it on your phone, watch it on television, put some headphones on and just let yourself get sucked into the visuals. It's a weird ride.
Nice. Now I have to check
it out. And there is one moment, for folks who have, I'm not going to spoil it, but for folks who have seen the music video, there is a moment where a character puts on a piece of headgear where literally jumped up in my seat and like said, hell yeah, now we're getting to it. You know, like there's a final action sequence that's sort of balletic. Like there's some incredible choreography. The actors in the film have this interesting physicality. I mean, everything looks different than you'd expect it to look. There's a gun that goes off that instead of it being like one beam, it's a whole bunch of like lasers that like dance in the air. There's like, it looks like a gun literally starts bleeding at one point. Like there's just some wild visuals in it. It's a trip for sure.
Nice.
Just real quick, I have done a lot of podcasting this week. I have my own podcast that I host with a couple of friends, called Two Drinks and a Haunting, where we get drunk and talk about true crime and horror. So go check that out on all podcast platforms. I also recorded a crossover episode with a podcast called The Stage Moms, where we discussed theater, and specifically haunted theaters. So that's a lot of fun. And I'll be on, the June 8th episode of Silver Linings Playlist, which is a podcast that discusses movies with downer endings. I'll be discussing, M. Night Shyamalan's The Happening. Ooh. So if anybody wants to hear me losing my mind over Mark Wahlberg's acting ability, it's a good time.
That's funny. That's a great title to a podcast, by the way.
Isn't it great? And it's such a cool concept. So hopefully I'll be doing some more episodes with those guys later this summer.
With all these podcasts coming out, how's your voice feeling right now?
Oh, it's so tired. Nice. It's so tired. I can't tell if I'm sick or if I'm just through listening to my own voice.
Well, Nathan, thank you so much for joining me this week while Forrest is out on his birthday. I really appreciate it.
Happy birthday, Forrest, also. Yeah, like happy birthday,
Forrest.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah, you're great. You know what? I love your knowledge. If I could just open your brain up and massage it and then squeeze a little of the juices into my brain. You know?
If you could massage it to the point where I can like make one point without rambling for like 5 minutes to get to it, then that'd be great. Get some of the wrinkles out.
Well, if you made it this far, thank you so much for listening. Please like, subscribe, and throw us a comment or a review on Apple Podcasts. And we'll be back next week. We have a guest from Comixology.
Ooh.
Their talent scout who's got a Kickstarter coming out. It's going to be pretty cool.
Cool.
Yeah.
Looking forward to hearing that.
Thanks so much, Nathan.
Thank you. Bye.